Ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking to you from the Coconut Grove of the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, where we are attending a meeting of the Los Angeles Area War Chest Committee. Our honored speaker for this breakfast this morning is the Honorable Wendell L. Wilkie. He will be introduced by Mr. Harvey S. Mudd, who is president of the Southern California Los Angeles War Chest Committee. Mr. Mudd.
Thank you. This early morning meeting is dedicated to the cause of the war chests of Los Angeles County. A war chest is a tangible expression of many of the principles and ideals for which we are waging war. Foremost is the belief that life is worth safeguarding, that it is our most prized possession. The degree of civilization of any people can be measured by the value that is attached to life. A civilization that holds life cheaply, a nation that holds life cheaply, is not civilized, notwithstanding what its other pretensions may be. We aim to save life and to make it more worth living. That is one of the objects of the war chest as it ministers to our own people through our community chests and to our allies through their relief agencies. A second object of the war chest is exemplified in the work which is done by the USO, by the Seamen's Fund, and by the War Prisoners' Aid. They contribute to the well-being and to the comfort and to the cheerfulness of those who have met danger already and of those who are going to be asked to face the enemy. In addition to men and munitions, tanks and planes, we need a crusade in the spirit of the war chest throughout the world. That is what we are launching within our own boundaries in this great campaign. We hope and pray that it will bring peace nearer and that it will be a better peace by reason of our efforts. There is no one who has more recent and wider first-hand knowledge of the heroism and sacrifice that has been displayed by those whom we aim to help, of the endurance and courage of our men on the fighting fronts, and whose sympathies for those among our citizens who are less fortunate than the man who has generously come to us and who will address us this morning. He is one of our truly great citizens, Mr. Wendell Wilkie.
Mr. Mudd, citizens of Los Angeles, this early morning breakfast and the necessity of arriving here from some miles distance, and the import and the importance of this occasion reminds me of a circumstance when I was at the Battle of the Alamein, which perhaps will be the decisive and determinative victory of this war. For it was at that moment on the sands of North Africa that the German threat reached its highest point and was checked through the magnificent generalship of Bernard L. Montgomery. I went over that battlefield with General Montgomery, and there were a small group of American soldiers comprising some tank corps. And I talked with those men. As a matter of fact, at the moment that I talked with them, they had just come out of fierce fighting. And I chatted along with them just as you would have under the circumstances. And you naturally expected on such a historic occasion and at the very apex of the threat to our civilization that great thoughts would be enunciated. After chatting with the boys for some moment, I said to them, "What can I do for you?" And one of the boys from Iowa spoke up and said, "Mr. Wilkie, if you have any influence, I wish you'd use it to the limit to keep that sergeant of mine from getting me up so early in the morning." The last time I spoke in Los Angeles was at one of your great stadiums here. I came here in 1941 to try to assist with others in arousing the people of this community to the necessity of becoming united, to the necessity of facing the fact that perhaps very shortly, not knowing how or when, that America would be pushed into armed conflict. And I remember, and it seems almost inconceivable now, that I was met as I entered that stadium with marching men with placards, not alone personally denouncing me, but denouncing the very cause which I was advocating at that time. Men who said that because there were certain of us who were trying to arouse America to its imminent danger and calling for a united nation behind the president who had defeated me in a campaign, that thereby somehow I was both betraying my party and my country and leading America to war because I was trying to arouse America to its own self-protection. That all seems inconceivable today. And yet we start on a new course at this time that perhaps will be as disputatious, as provocative, and where men will say equally strong things, and if you'll permit me the privilege, equally erroneous things in opposition. The American people today are beginning to have a great hope as our armies are penetrating Italy, as those great forces of the fighting Russians are moving onward and onward ever towards Germany, as we see the advance in the Pacific. We begin to say to ourselves, this horrible menace is coming to an end. It'll shortly be over. Our boys will be back home. We will take up the pursuits of peace once more, happy, happy as we once were, and in the same manner that we were once happy. But the future holds no such store for us, even though we might cherish it much. Wars have strange effects, and victories sometimes apparent do not occur. It frequently happens that the defeated triumph with much of their ideas. You'll recall that some century and a half and more ago, there arose another menacing threat upon the continent of Europe which disturbed the peace of the world in the form of Napoleon Bonaparte. He was defeated He was crushed. But in order to defeat him and in order to crush him, his opponents, the United Nations of those days, had to adopt much of his very military strategy. And his system of law and administration was adopted throughout Europe after the struggle was over. Frequently, in armed conflict, those who are defeated impose their wills upon the victors. So in this war, we face an ideology, and the question tomorrow is whether, although we have defeated the arms of that ideology, will we be able to defeat the ideology itself? That is the challenge to America of tomorrow. Following the last war, certain economic and social forces developed in Europe. Certain errors were made in the peace treaty, with the result that in the heart of Germany there arose certain forces, and they finally found their manifestation in the Hitler Doctrine. And the Hitler Doctrine essentially was to make of all men of a nation robots to a centralized state, to make each man in a modern industrial society for the nation respond to the dictates of a central will, responsive to orders from a single head. And let's have no illusions about it. That produced a very, very effective instrumentality. For it always will produce a very effective instrumentality in a modern industrial society. Just as large-scale industrial production, where thousands and thousands of men responded to a centralized authority, produced an effective industrial organization. So powerful was that conception and that idea that it's taking nations five times as great in peoples, in resources, almost in spirit, to defeat and destroy the arms of that ideology. And we ourselves, we, the most democratic people in all this world, have found it necessary, or at least we have thought it necessary, to adopt much of the organization technique of that force in order to defeat and to destroy it. Now, without going into disputatious questions, I think some of that centralization has been overdone. But irrespective of that, much of it has been necessary. And we will not end it, my fellow American citizens, by merely prating against it, by merely shouting out and crying away with it. I want to get rid of it. I want to end it. I don't want to have my individual life interfered with. For a modern society, in order to survive, must be effective, or it will die like any other form of life that becomes ineffective. And so the challenge to America of tomorrow is as to whether or not we can make American society effective in a modern industrial world by the voluntary process. Can we, free, loving people, obtain both local and national objectives sufficiently vital and vibrant and effective in order to preserve our society under a free system? You won't answer that problem by shouting nor by crying, nor by bemoaning, nor by calling for a nostalgic past which will never come into being again in the form in which it was. Modern American society must find objectives, must find objectives towards which local communities and towards the nation, towards which the nation is striving. And it must learn, if it's to preserve its freedom, how to make those objectives effective by the voluntary process. But if we do not find that method, so potent is the idea of the organization of the state with every man responsive, that the Hitlerian doctrine may triumph over us even though we destroy and defeat its arms. That's the challenge of tomorrow, and it's as clear as the challenge when we had this meeting 3 years ago in Los Angeles to call the people of this community to national unity and to the building of an effective force for the resistance of the onslaught of the aggressors. And I come to this meeting because I find in it the very symbol and the very process by which perhaps we can find the method of voluntarism as opposed to compulsory activity. This community faces a great need. These hospitals, these community services, these contributions to British and Chinese and Russian war relief, this USO program, all are a problem of this community. And in the fact that you hear this morning the people of Los Angeles, of all occupations, of all political beliefs, of all economic and social slants, of every race and religion, can join at this hour in the morning to begin an effective program for the accomplishment of a great community purpose is the finest sign that America will find the method of being effective by the voluntary process. And I'm doubly delighted about it, because if the values in America that we all believe are really worthwhile are to be preserved, their preservation must come not from the inspiration of authority, not from inspiration from beyond. The inspiration for those things must come from the community itself. They must spring up in 1,000 American communities and then join in a national effort to produce for our whole country a national objective to which every American citizen can contribute, not by the force of law or in response to executive decree, but by the voluntary chorus and cooperation of its citizens. You engage, you start here this morning in the engagement, not alone of an objective worthy of this city and of this county. You start here this morning one of the fine symbols of the future. Here I see the hope of America. Here I call you as one from outside to measure up nobly and highly to the task that you've imposed upon yourself. To all these great services, to those who take care of the sick, those who provide for the soldier no matter on what front, to those Russians and those Chinese, and those British who have fought so gallantly and in whose cooperation with us after the war, lies the only hope of peace and security. World around, one world in its effort. Fill her up. Fill this chest to overwhelming. You're engaged in a noble task. You're organizing Los Angeles as a part of the principles of freedom in this world tomorrow. Thank you very much. I want to eat this breakfast that I got up so early to get to.